Coach's Corner.
Hello and welcome everybody to this edition of the Coach's Corner. I'm David Stearns, joined with Brian Schrems and of course Coach Aaron Vogelei. Gentlemen, how are you all this evening?
Yeah, doing pretty well. How about you?
Doing well. Schrems, you alive over there?
Yeah, I'm buckling down for Icepocalypse 2011 again, so.
Yeah, how are things up there in Philly, Coach?
It hasn't even started raining yet. I think people are so worried about nothing.
Yeah, well, hopefully we don't have a repeat of last year. What did we have last year? Three games canceled?
Four.
Four.
We can't afford that.
No.
This, coming up to our last 2 weeks, we need these last 2 weeks.
Especially this coming weekend. But let's briefly recap here. Well, let's take as much time as we need to recap the game against East Carolina University. The Pirates came sailing into town this past Saturday. Yes, I'm full of puns tonight. We saw an interesting contest. I mean, at first it looked like it was going to be this complete sweeping blowout, and then the third period happened. But, Coach, why don't you take us through what happened, from your side of the ice on the bench?
I think for the most part, I think the guys need to get back on track, and they finally did, which was kind of nice to see. I mean, we had to get Durkee and OC off the snake pit and road that they were on. Post wasn't playing really good hockey. Drew wasn't playing really good hockey. So for the first couple periods, they looked pretty good. Durkee popped in a couple goals. Durante got him getting moved up because Shane was out. Still, he popped in a couple goals. Obviously, Drew had a great night with 6 goals. But Post, I thought, really set the tempo for the game and the pace. So I was pretty happy to see that.
Now, your line combinations that you were talking about juggling up here, how did that all work out for you? I mean, were the combinations just right with that chemistry? I mean, the first period with the 6-0 going into the dressing room, did you feel that you had that chemistry on the lines that you had kind of forged together with the absence of a couple of players?
I think it worked out okay. I'm going to be interested to see what happens once we put Shane back into the mix and Ryder back into the mix to kind of see where he fits in. Especially now moving him from defenseman to forward. But I thought we did okay. I thought Drew's line played pretty well together with Becker and obviously Sean O'Connor. And I thought Post and Durkee got off to a good start, but I think we're just kind of scratching the surface of how well those guys can play together.
Mm-hmm. Trams, you got something in there?
I do. What was the consensus on Mersman's part after the game? I mean, what was, you go into the third period feeling pretty confident about yourself, and then you get shelled for six goals seemingly out of nowhere. Having a good season, I mean, a very respectable season, good numbers, good goals against. I believe he's 5-1 now. What was the consensus after that? Was he frustrated more than anything with himself, or where is he looking to improve? Because he could factor in down the road here a couple of times.
Oh, he could, and I think he will at some point in time. But Merz has had a great year. I mean, Brian's a great kid. He's come a long ways from last year. I thought he had a great first couple periods, and I think he had probably, four of those that he really wants back. I think the first one, for whatever reason, it was a great shot. I don't think there was really much he could do about it. Got a shot, got taken from just inside the blue line, hit the inside of the post, and found the right side of the net.
Right.
But I think it just got to him for whatever reason. He's never been like that in the past. I don't expect him to be like that in the future. But for whatever reason, that goal really rattled him. And then, we didn't do a real good job after that of really, kind of helping him out. Our defensemen were still looking for a big hit in the corner. We were rolling 4 of them because Yosti wasn't in there. And our forwards were just trying to see how many goals they could score and really didn't help out. I mean, they really kind of just hung him out to dry. And, he's just not at the point of his career where you can do that. PJ is. He's not. But Brian will be fine. Yeah, I have no doubts about that. It's just, it was a little disheartening to see.
Sure. Absolutely.
Now, going down the road, first off, let me correct, it was 7-0 after the first period, but going down the road, I mean, you should, Brian Mersman is he looking to be your number one next year, or do you have some recruiting going on? Are you looking to improve the goaltending beyond P.J. Carmack, kind of matching his talent for next year? I mean, I can see the potential in Brian Mersman as, you know, being in that upper echelon, but, I mean, are you – I mean, you have Trevor Miller back there, and we saw the sudden exit of Casey Davis, but, I mean, you also have, you know, some other goaltenders that are interested in filling a role on the bench. Are you looking to Brian Mersman as the future, if I can ask bluntly?
I mean, yes. We are. I mean, I think we're – I mean, Mersman's definitely going to get – he's going to get a shot at it. To say that I'm not recruiting – to replace, or at least to fill a void that PJ is going to leave when he leaves, would be incorrect. Of course, I am. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm talking to, you know, four or five different goaltenders, one from the North American Hockey League, one from NCAA D3 that's from Minnesota, who's an all-state goaltender. So, I mean, there are opportunities whether we can, you know, we can recruit, you know, successfully enough to get them to come to UMBC. That's, you know, still yet to be seen. But, I mean, if we don't, you know, get anybody in, you know, Mersman's our guy, and even if we do, Brian's going to get a shot, just like the new kid coming in, to be the number one goaltender.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, taking a look at the way things kind of worked out, you had a few shorthanded goals in this game. Let's talk a little bit about special teams. There was a few power play opportunities here, and obviously you capitalized on a couple. Are you looking to blend any kind of system here, or are you sticking with your key guys going into the game against Miami of Ohio? Because, I mean, special teams may be what it comes down to against Miami of Ohio.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it did last year when we were up there. I expected fully to come into a major, play a major, you know, key into the games this weekend. I mean, there's a couple differences between last year's team and this year's team. Last year's team was so talented on the power play. Mm-hmm. Using these guys, but for whatever reason, they were clicking so much better last year that, you know, I for whatever reason, we played so much better. We really thrived on the power play. We lived and died by our special teams, where this year, not so much. We've struggled most of the year. We're starting to turn it up as of late a little bit. You know, like we've got three power play goals in the last two games. And we ended the first semester with a couple power play goals, but we really thrived 5-on-5. So I mean, we've scored more 5-on-5 goals this year than we did, I think, all of last year already, and we scored over 100 more goals last year. So you know, I think both need to be taken into consideration. But we are looking to mix a couple things up. We worked on it a lot on Monday. I know that, you know, Joe Ulrich is really going to, you know, tap into it on Thursday and work, you know, primarily on the power play on Thursday to get us ready for this weekend. So, I mean, I'm looking to see a lot of different things. You might see a little bit more overload than the actual umbrella, but mm-hmm. We'll see what happens.
Now, Nick Vaughn, of course, getting his first point as a retriever, and then you also had Craig Panzino come back into the lineup. I see he's a junior, so he's got one more year underneath his belt. What year is Nick Vaughn, by chance, can you tell?
He's a freshman.
Okay, so yep. I see he played with the Central Penn Panthers, and I've seen that team actually a few years back, and I believe he may have been on that team that My Mercier's Lakers played against way back when, back in 2008. But what are your impressions of, you know, Vaughn and Panzino coming out in this game? I know you talked briefly about them in the intermission reports, but, you know, why don't you use this as kind of like a spotlight, you know, to kind of give us more an in-depth opinion on what you think of what they can bring to this team throughout the rest of the season.
Okay, I mean, Craig is a very gritty player. He used to play for the squad actually before I even came down here. Now he's a very hard-working forward. I think he just needs to get his hockey IQ to get moved up a little bit. I mean, he's a decent skater. He's an average to above average skater. He works his tail off. He loves to hit. He's got a, you know, above average shot. I mean, is he ever going to be a top line goal scorer? No, he's not. But he knows that. So I mean, I think he's going to be a definite big role model or role player, whether it's, you know, later on this year or, you know, going into next year. We're just happy to have him. Vaughn, otherwise known throughout our locker room as Bubba, he just, I mean, and he really does look like a Bubba. It's great, and he says that's his name, not Nick, but he is just he's one of those kids that you look at and laugh at in a good way, and then he talks and you hear what he has to say and you continue to laugh more. He's a great kid. He's a great kid in the locker room. His hockey IQ is actually through the roof. He knows the game extremely well. He's got a great shot if he ever gets the chance to take it, which we're working on. He's just, you know, we got to get his legs back. We got to get his legs back and got to get him back into game shape because he's nowhere close to that. He hasn't played in 2 years. So, you know, it's something that we have to work on. And, you know, we're hoping that, you know, we don't have short-term goals for Nick. We have very large and big down-the-road goals for Nick, and I think he's going to do great for us moving forward.
What roles do you see them in for the remainder of the season as you get into the push here for playoffs and that?
I think that they're going to be spot fills. I think they're going to be third, fourth liner guys that I can put out there for 30 seconds, not give up a goal, but also can go out there and thump some people if we need to. And I think that's really going to come into play. I think there's going to be some times during this upcoming weekend up against a much faster team than they can handle in Miami, where Miami will put out their third or fourth line, and we got to be very cognizant of that. And then throw, you know, Panzino and Vaughn out there to go hit somebody and kind of change the tempo and maybe get some momentum going back our way in case we need it.
Now, in that third period, of course, we saw if you took, you know, the first and second period out of consideration, the score was 7-6. Would you just attribute that to just guys trying to score? I mean, you mentioned it, you know, maybe this is just your opinion on how that third period went altogether, but did the guys just worry more about just scoring and laying back and, you know, not even playing defensive hockey beyond that? What caused that third period to be so close?
Well, I mean, it has a couple of things. I mean, number one, I think you had, you know, a couple of guys that were out there just to score goals. But, I mean, if we really look at the third period and really kind of dig into it, it was 14-0 us with 8 minutes or, I guess, 14 minutes left in the game. So in the first 6 minutes of that period, we came out and scored 4 goals. At that point, I kind of really slowed down the lines of, because I also, you know, noticed that they were starting to pick up the hitting and not really, you know, kind of being a little bit reckless out there. So I sat, you know, Drew Hartcherick's line more than I usually would. I sat Alex Post and Durkee a little bit more than I usually would, you know, and really let my third and fourth liners get out there. Naren got a couple shifts and picked up a penalty and they scored on it. But I needed, you know, I wanted to get, you know, get those guys into the game because it was 14-0. And that's, you know, that's where they started popping some goals. And then I kind of got on the guys and sent, you know, Drew out there and Alex out there. And even they gave up a couple of goals. I can't say that they weren't out there because they certainly did. But, you know, we kind of did a couple different things. And, I mean, that's good that I got those guys some rest, but it's also very scary that I put my third and fourth lines out there and they gave up, you know, 4 out of the 6 goals in a matter of about 10 minutes. So that's something we've already changed up, some combinations already that I didn't like out of that third period for practice on Monday, and, you know, we'll move forward.
What is your game plan? Are you thinking more of an offensive minded strategy for Friday and Saturday night, or are you going to, you know, patient, wait for your opportunities and strike when you can?
Miami is not a team that we can really realistically sit back,
sure,
and just kind of wait for our opportunities. There are teams out there that we can do that, like a Lindenwood, you know, but Miami is not. They are full, you know, the pedal is all the way down all the time. They're very young. And what teams don't do a lot to them, and what we did to them last year that really kind of threw a kink in their armor, was we really attacked them up the middle of the rink, you know, with Craig Fisher and OC and Durkee, and even Post and Drew to some effect, that full speed up through the middle of the rink. And we're going to plan on doing the same thing this week. Now we've got a couple tricks up our sleeve. We're going to change up our forecheck a little bit, just from what I remember and also saw film on when they were up at the showcase. But we're gonna go after them. We got to find a way to get to their goaltenders, because that's their defense and their goaltending is Miami's weakness. It's just not the easiest to get there. They're a very good team. They're very well coached, and we're gonna combat that by attacking them.
Sure.
What is your feeling, more in-depth feeling about Miami of Ohio, considering, you know, they split the last two weekends against two teams out of the Central, one of them being Michigan and the other being Michigan State, which are both ranked 3 and 5. Actually, it's Michigan that's at 5, Michigan State at 3. What is your impression of those two weekends? I mean, does that just show that maybe the Central is a little bit stronger, or Miami of Ohio is just kind of, you know, in flux of any kind of sort? What are your thoughts on these past two weekends for Miami of Ohio?
I mean, let's not forget that they play in the GMHL, which is the best conference in college hockey at this level. I mean, even without Davenport, you still have Lindenwood, you still have Grand Valley State, Michigan State, Miami, Ohio State. I mean, that's you're playing a national contender every single weekend in league play. And the fact that you can split and over the course of time, the amount of times that those teams split is astronomical. Very few times, unless you have a Davenport, and even sometimes Grand Valley State can really get up there. But you're going to split just about every single one, just because of the parity and how talented that league is. If we can get a split, I'm going to be extremely happy. But what I'm looking for is a sweep of them, because that's what we need. Which is very possible for us, but I don't look down on Miami or think anything less of Miami because they split with Michigan State. Let's not forget that Michigan State was the team to keep the score the closest, and Miami's the closest to keep the score the closest up against Florida Gulf Coast. Mm-hmm. I mean, Florida's blown everybody out, you know, minus us, Michigan State, Miami, and Ohio State. Miami and Ohio State were both one goal games. We beat them by 4, and they beat Michigan, I think, by 2 with an empty netter to make 3. So we're talking extremely good hockey this weekend with Miami. I have nothing but the utmost respect for their coaching staff. I've known Dan for years, and what he does with those kids is amazing.
With those two weekends in consideration that they just came off of, and also the two losses that the Retrievers suffered at the hands of the Hokies and Kentucky, where do you see these two teams sitting going into this weekend? Because if I'm not mistaken, the rankings are completed for, you know, the month of January going into the final period. Where do you see these two teams sitting? Is it going to be Miami above you guys or below you guys?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Miami's going to be the number two for sure. And we're either going to sit, I'm guessing, at either 3 or 4. Just depends. I mean, Liberty did go undefeated in this ranking period. They didn't play anybody, I guess astronomical. They did beat a team that we lost to, so I guess that does hold some weight. But, I mean, we still hold the number, you know, we still hold a win over Liberty, so I could see us being either 3 or 4.
Okay. All right. So now you said you're shifting Ryder up to the front, correct?
That is correct.
So are you putting more of a focus on the offensive game going into this weekend more so than the defensive game? Or, I mean, how are you treating the back end with defense?
No, I mean, I think we have 5 very, very strong and very talented defensemen. Especially for the next, you know, at least this weekend, Miami's not going to be overly aggressive. I mean, they're very aggressive, but I wouldn't say they're a real big grinding and we're just going to beat you up in the corners type game. So Rafferty's going to be just fine back there. And then you look at, and you got Dana Becker, Taylor Morgan, Andrew Ojeda, and Nick Yost. Well, I mean, those are 4 defensemen that I would hate to have to go up against every single shift. I mean, they're very talented. We worked a lot on them this week in practice on Monday, just for a different kind of a mindset and being able, you know, to be the brick wall that they have the talent to be and still being able to move the puck quicker. We worked on our breakouts a little bit more, giving us options once a turnover happens. To give our defensemen a little bit more of an outlet and what they're looking for and what I want them to be looking for. So it's not so much that I am looking more at the offense than the defense side of it. I'm just trying to strengthen both of them at the very same time. And I think Ryder's got a lot to offer. And have we seen the end of Ryder playing defense? No, absolutely not. I think he's going to be up and down as we need him this year, which is, you know, an asset that most teams don't have. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think he's going to work out really well with Vaughn and Panzina when we need a big shift of somebody to go out and hit somebody. You know, he's going to be able to do that, and I think he's going to take advantage of those opportunities. I mean, he can shoot. He can skate. He's got decent hands. We just got to kind of, you know, work on teaching him the defensive side of it from the forward position a little bit better.
I like it. We're going to be seeing the 1999 Buffalo Sabres this weekend. We're going to have Michael Pekka up front, which is Kevin Ryder, and then Yost, Brian Campbell up in the back, and then Dominic Hasek being PJ Carmack. I like this. Good setup, Coach.
Interesting.
Thanks. Strams, you got something?
Yeah, I got a question for you. You talked about how, you know, Ohio's not a team that's going to go into the quarters and beat you up. But you have guys capable of grinding it out. You have some serious grinders. First name that comes to mind is Upshaw. What are you looking? He doesn't score. The opportunities that kid gets is unbelievable, but he just can't seem to bury it. But in and around the net, playing like garbage man, or in the corners, winning pucks. What kind of performance are you expecting from like a third line grinder unit against Miami? Where can you? Do you see that as a possibility to contribute to chances in the offensive zone, winning the pucks and the boards and that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if they play like they did when we went up there, I mean, if memory serves me correctly, Upshaw scored the game winner to make it 3-2 in the first game when we went up to Miami last year. I mean, our third line, you know, whether it's Fritz and Upshaw and Rothschild, or Ryder gets up there, or we put Bubba up there for a shift, or Panner works his way up there, we have many combinations that we have to really pick from and try things out and give guys plenty of breaks. I mean, their job, their ultimate job, they all know it. We've religiously talked about it, and we're going to continue to, is that they cannot give up a goal, and their job out there is to basically just grind those corners and make Miami pay the price for being on the ice with them. That's their job. Keep Miami out of the middle of the rink, and once they get to the outside, make them pay the price for being out there up against the boards. So, Miami is fast. They might be, other than Florida Gulf Coast and us, the fastest teams in the Southeast. We're going to have to do our job, especially with our third, and if our fourth line gets out there, to slow the pace down, at least their pace while they're out there. And the only way to do that is to take the body and grind the corners and play puck possession. So I think we're going to do a great job with it. I have a lot of confidence in how they're going to play. Upshaw is going to be a big key. Him and I have spent a lot of time last night on the phone talking about what I expect and how I want it different. It's funny that you say he gets a ton of opportunities, because he does. It was one of my focal points in talking to him. And the reason why he doesn't ever put the puck in the back of the net, or at least not as much as he should, is because he's still trying to be more of a Drew Hartcherick, and an Alex Post, instead of being like a Durkee. You know, he wants to use his moves instead of using his speed. And Upshaw, it caught at full flight, is just as fast as just about everybody on our team, and he's by far the strongest kid on our team. You know, he is the epitome of the power forward, just like I was when I played. And he's finally kind of, breaking down that wall a little bit. And I think, hopefully what we see from this point forward is going to be more positive things out of Brandon, and being able to use that very strong body. And hopefully it equates to, putting more pucks in the net, because he's just going about it the wrong way, because he definitely has the scoring ability. His shot is probably top five on the team. We just got to put him in better positions, and, he's going to have to help out on that.
I know when you run the power play, you got Hartcharik up at the point. What's you ever think of putting someone like Upshaw or someone with a bigger frame in front of the net, for that that agitator for the goaltender?
We've looked at Upshaw. It's usually Shane Callahan that stands in there, which is a huge frame. He's actually bigger than Upshaw, and he actually works out really well with that group. But with Shane being out, I have experimented with Fritzy, because he just is an agitator, period. Is very strong in his skates. I've looked at Upshaw. The reason I haven't used Upshaw more is for two reasons. Number one, the last couple of times I've done that, he's drawn a penalty, and it's just unacceptable. He gets, cross-checked or slashed, and he throws a cross-check back. The guy falls, and now Upshaw's in the box, and we're 4-on-4. But the other side of it is it doesn't matter how big a guy is. Rob Durkee is by far the best guy we have for in front of the net. He loves it. He always finds himself in a shooting lane, in a passing lane, They just have to find him more. And he is the first one to every puck, and he's done an amazing job from the middle of the rink, and he loves it. He loves being there. So I really can't argue with that at all. So if we're going to run one power play unit like we have the last couple games, Rob Durkee's our guy in the middle. So.
All right. Well, you know, I may have been exaggerating a little bit, and I also have my Sabres history off a little bit. Brian Campbell's not on that 99 Sabres team. But speaking of...
I was on that.
What's that?
I said I wasn't going to call you on that. I was going to give that one to you, but that's okay.
He was drafted that year out, I believe. But anyway,
sure, he was, Stearns.
Yeah, okay. So anyway, but going with that theme, I mean, strong, solid goaltending between the pipes. You know the players better than we do, being, you know, with the presence in the locker room and that, and, of course, we only see one side of it from our perspective. What is the mentality of P.J. Carmack going into this weekend's games? I mean, these are probably the most important two games out of, like, maybe the remaining... with the Temple game aside, these two games are pretty much pivotal in whether or not you guys get the auto bid. So what is going on in PJ Carmack's mind right now?
I hope nothing, to be honest with you. I hope absolutely nothing. I hope he sees it as just two more games. One thing you never have to worry about, PJ, is showing up for a big game. You don't. He played out of his mind, you know, in pretty much every single game he's played this year. Does he have some losses? Absolutely he does. And not one of them I will ever put on PJ. I put it on the guys that we put in front of them. I put one or two of them on me. But, you know, PJ's a big game goaltender. You know, he doesn't mind the lesser teams or the teams that might not be as talented, but he wants to play the biggest and the best. So, now I have absolutely... I know exactly who's going to show up on Friday and Saturday night out of PJ Carmack. It is going to be the very light-witted, light-hearted guy. But when it comes to seeing a shot, he's going to be there, and that's great. He's the backbone of our team. He has been for the last 3 years, and he's going to continue throughout this year. And we're going to go as far as he takes us, and as far as we can play in front of him. So.
Now, with both these games coming up this weekend, in your mindset here, are these both must-win games, or would you be okay with one win out of these, whether it be the first or the last of the two? What do you think?
I mean, I think we have to win them both. I mean, must-wins are really difficult to say, only because, is there a chance we're going to lose? Absolutely. Are we not going to make the playoffs? If we lose, no. Are they must wins for the auto bid? Absolutely. Have to be. We cannot get an auto bid and split. Just not going to happen. We sealed that fate on that road trip to Virginia Tech and Kentucky. So, it's going to be what it's going to be, and we're going to find out what team shows up. We're going to find out who we are and how bad we don't want to have to go back up to Temple's rank for regionals.
If you don't make the auto bid, what teams? Any idea what teams you'll be looking at?
Right now, I think it's if I'm going to be a betting man, I mean, if we make three, we're going to play 10. And right now, there's a huge jostle for 10. It could be Kentucky again. It could be Maryland. And that would be funny, drive to Philadelphia to play a team that's, literally 5 minutes down the road from us. We haven't played in 2 years. It could be Ryder. Ryder could sneak in depending on how we do up against them. It could be Penn State. They could drop down. I mean, there's a good number of teams that could, just barely fit in. I think that's going to be, even a tighter race than I would say 3, 4, and 5, even though I think that's going to be a really tight race too, depending on, who's in and who's out of the auto bid. So it should be interesting to say the least. And then, the winner of that might play the winner of Ohio State and Ohio State and Virginia Tech, which right now would be sitting 6 and 7. So it could be a very interesting regional tournament. But I hope to God we come to play this weekend. We don't have to worry about it. I'd rather beat Dan twice down in our building this weekend and send Miami back and knowing that they have to come back this way for regionals.
All right, Trams, you got anything else?
I don't know.
All right, Coach, were you aware that Drew Hartchark was going for the Ovech trick? Do you know what the Ovech trick is?
I have absolutely no idea. I don't watch the Washington Capitals, nor do I.
Now, see, it was a nationwide commercial for Verizon where Ovechkin scores 3 hat tricks. It was some promotion for the Winter Classic. So the big joke up in the booth on Saturday's game was that he was going for the Ovech trick. So,
I guess.
Yeah. All right. Okay. That point is lost. So, all right, Coach, any final thoughts going into this weekend against Miami?
No, I mean, I think it's all going to depend on Friday night and the tempo that we set in the first 10 minutes of the game, and see how we can, see how we do and see how they react, and, we'll see what happens. Should be a great weekend of hockey, though.
All right, definitely looking forward to it. We will see you at the rink. And for everybody, you can tune in on Ustream or on Fast Hockey, Ustream for audio and Fast Hockey for video with a nominal fee. So tune in. Puck drop slated at about 8:30. So with that being said, this is David Stearns with Brian Tremson, Coach Aaron Vogelai, saying thank you for joining us, and don't stop believing.
Take care.